he going in the lake?
He's not.
He's going in the lake.
No. Please, all right. No, no.
Here we go. One, two. Oh, lovely. Great wind up there from the red zone.
No, I don't think he would go in there again.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 448 for Wednesday, the 6th of May, 2015. My name is Jim Race. I am here in the north of California. I am joined by Martin Darlington, who, and the two of us haven't been together for a while, in the middle of a desert somewhere in Qatar.
Absolutely. Hello, Jim. Great to have you back on the show. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Are you like in? Can I say you're in the north of Qatar, or are you in the south, or is are you just down at the nearest?
In the middle right hand bit.
Okay, all right. That's just not as eloquent.
No, Doha is the only big city for people in UK. It's about the same size in area and population as Manchester.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, we're having lovely weather here today, and I'm assuming you've got sunny weather there. It only rains during a MotoGP week, right?
Mm-hmm. Only ever. Yes, well, we all remember that. Was it the first or second night race?
I think it was the second one. But, you know, that was a brilliant bit to watch live, because that was Nick and Gavin. And it was like 8 hours of them trying to fill in. And they did a master job of doing it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But Gavin Emmett, absolutely fantastic. I don't get him here now because he's obviously gone to BT.
Right.
But I have to say, Matt Burt, is for someone who had so many years in print journalism, he's just a natural. He's really good.
And he's getting better every show, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's also, I think he's learnt the Gavin trick of managing to correct or reel in Nick a bit without making it too obvious and undermining him. Because Nick is an institution, but he does sometimes get a bit Murray Walker.
As long as he doesn't get Charlie Cox, it's all good.
Oh, goodness me. No, he's leagues above Charlie Cox. Oh, it's so sad that he's not around anymore. Well, obviously he's around, and he's probably a really nice guy. And a couple of our guys have met him, haven't they? And said he is a really nice guy. I just didn't want to listen to his commentary.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's kind of interesting how the teams are moving around, or the individuals are moving around and creating these new teams and stuff. And I still, much like Bob's original Pepsi Challenge, if you will go and listen. We'll go and listen to other broadcasts. I mean, I listened to the early BT Sports stuff simply because Colin Edwards was doing pit reporting. I don't know if you knew that, did you?
Yeah. No, I had BT Sport at home.
Okay.
And I must admit, I enjoy the Keith Hugh and Julian Ryder pairing, because as a few people pointed out, they're very different characters to Toby and Julian, who for often, you know, when we did Bob's Pepsi Challenge or when Bob did it, you know, it always was they were the standard.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, they're both really nerdy, like we are. Whereas Keith's a bit more, well, one, he's an ex-racer, so that gives a slightly different perspective. But also, he's like a more general fan. He's knowledgeable, but he's not necessarily fascinated by the minor technical detail that Julian will talk to Spalders about for hours. So, yeah, and I think they work quite well together. And they clash, but very good humoredly, which is quite good fun.
Nothing wrong with a little clash.
No.
Yes.
No, they were a great band.
You're in the perfect place to rock the Casbah, dude.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And unfortunately, here they call them souks, and it doesn't really scan quite as well.
Yeah.
Rock the souk.
All right, well, thanks for listening to the show.
Yeah. This has been the Jim and Martin reunion show.
Carry forward, Martin.
Yeah, well, we've got a new subscriber, Andrew Course. Massive thank you, Andrew. That's really good. And the great thing about subscribing, I mean, you know, if someone out there is thinking we're going to bung you some money, if you break it down and subscribe the same amount, it makes predictable income, which just makes budgeting so much easier for Harry. It's another of the onerous duties that Harry, our editor and accountant, and basically the glue that's been holding the show together. I mean, it's Harry and Dave through the winter. Now, Dave's got stuff going on at work. You know, you and I have had stuff going on. So, you know, huge thank you to Harry, which also brings us on to the, we've had another donor this week, Nick Randall. And Nick said he's been an avid listener for 3+ seasons now. Couldn't say thank you enough. Also, well done lately. Harry, very well done. And I'd just like to echo that, because Harry is absolutely, you know, if any of us say, well, life's getting in the way, I can't make it this week, Harry always manages to step up. But we're going to have to cover for Harry for the next few weeks, because he does have some kind of university exam thing going on. I don't know. It's called graduating, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess it's actually kind of entertaining to listen to his solo shows, because I think he gets into his own head and he starts.
He has conversations with himself. Yeah.
He does.
Hilarious.
And you're like, oh, okay.
But the funny thing is when he disagrees with himself, and you're I'm not sure how that happens.
Wandering through, I did not see a lot of email this week. Martin, did you?
No, there's been a couple. Really just sort of people wowing about Argentina. And this week, I doubt if this weekend's race is going to generate a huge amount. It may do. I don't know. But it is worth noting, someone emailed a few weeks ago and was saying, you know, it's great that, you know, Harry and Dave had done a great job to win all that. But they were saying they missed you. Because when, and I'm sorry, dear emailer, and listener, I can't remember your name. But he said when he came to the show, it was Jim and Jules, then Jim, Jules and Martin. And so he'd heard my voice, but he was kind of, come on, where's the American side coming from? So he'll be, whoever it was, he'll be glad to see you back or hear you back.
But I do remember that. And thank you, listener. And it'll come to me before we get too far down. Martin, going through and explaining how poorly I've been doing in the fantasy league.
Just a reminder, if anybody does have a motorcycle news fantasy league out there, a team, and they want to join the Motopod mini league, our pin number is 19132. If you go to the homepage, it says join a league, and then it says would you like to start a new one or join an existing one. You put that number in, 19132, and then Harry will approve you if you're doing worse than Harry is, and he's not doing too badly now, so there's a good chance you will be. I'm joking, actually. He'll let anybody in. but the update as of this week, after MotoGP at Jerez and Alton Park's BSB races, which were on Monday, being a bank holiday in England, still at the top is Steve James, MK Racing, with 577 points. And Steve's doing quite well. He's 22nd overall in the overall MCN standings. Second is Roger England with Rovers 1883, who's just got past Mark Crewe, who's dropped from second to third with Haringworth Hustlers. Roger's on 562 points and Mark is on 555. As far as the hosts go, I'm managing to keep my head above water on 516, ninth. Which, yeah, and I thought, when I say ninth, that's ninth in the Motopod League. I'm something like 890th overall. Yep. Scott Bolton, Team Moto Dog, 472 points. He's 33rd. Jules, 430 with Desmo Burnouts 2015. 70th place. Sorry, 69th place. I've got those the wrong way around. At 1 point and one place behind him is Dave Neal with Strawbell's Mediocre RT. And Dave's doing, I mean, compared to last season, where when Dave basically just forgot that he had a team and he could update it, Dave's on 429 points in 69th position. Harry.
Or he just told us that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or he's just really bad at it. Sorry, Dave's in 70th position, 13 places behind, but only 8 points is Harry Lloyd with Necessary Faster. Then there's yourself, Jim, 355 points, 149th. And Len, for such a talented and knowledgeable chap, 300 points, 184th. We've only got about 205 people in the league, so Len needs to pick up his skirts and put a bit of a spurt on.
Well, I think I can already note that as a trend in this particular section that I'm going to be moving up, and I have been moving up. But I think I started with such a deficit. I thought it was like last year, Martin, where you could pick your team, because last year, if you remember, you could pick your team before every race.
Each round. Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, this is what I picked for the first round. And then I found out that no, you were stuck with these, you know, these big gaps of time. And I'm like, well, okay, I'm screwed.
Yeah. And I was a bit disappointed because I thought that we were going to have, I thought it was going to be the same as last year, where it was MotoGP, Moto2, and Moto3.
Yeah.
And at least it's all concentrated, you know, in the same weekend. But then I suppose what they looked at is you've also, if you do that, you've got a problem with the weekends where there's no MotoGP racing, there's nothing to do. Whereas at least it does spread out sometimes. But
well, yeah, I will point out to you that I'm doing very well in the MotoGP.com league.
I haven't done that this year.
I nailed the top 9 in order at Argentina. In order.
Jeepers creepers. And considering the order that was, that's quite remarkable.
I did pretty well. I got top 3 at last weekend. So, although that wasn't much of a stretch, right? No, I'm doing pretty good over there. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen out there, people in Motopod land, if you're not playing the fantasy league, it is kind of fun. There's no charge. It doesn't cost anything. And it's just something to jawbone about. But it does, it gives you the opportunity and kind of pushes you to pay attention to what's going on during qualifying. And kind of have an idea about what's going to be going on and why people are where they are in the standings. And on top of that, it kind of stretches your math skills a little bit when the rounds come around, because you got to remember how many races that each series runs. So we've joked about this for years when we've been doing it. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a worthwhile thing, you know.
It adds an extra element to, you know.
It does, because we like talking shit about each other.
Yeah.
if nothing else.
Well, we've had quite a bit of news this week. Jorge Lorenzo announced that he is remaining with Yamaha in 2016. Now, that caused a lot of surprise when people said, but it was a 2-year contract. It was. But he had a break clause in his contract. However, nearly all the factory rides are contracted to the end of next season, so there wouldn't have been many options open, even if he considered leaving it, and I'm sure he hasn't, seriously. Be interesting to see what happens with young Danny Pedrosa. But Jorge's obviously looked at it and thought, actually, we're not that far away from the Honda. So you know, let's stick it. If they're far away at all, I mean, if there is a gap anymore.
That really is a big question for this year. With Danny currently scheduled to come back at Le Mans, and Hiroshi, you know, he did the best he could, stepping onto that bike, and as he's done before when Danny was out, and not a bad showing at the last round.
I don't think he's done any worse than people expected.
No,
I don't think that much was expected from him. Yeah. And supposedly he's been testing out a new swing arm. He's been testing out other bits of kit. And it's testing in a race environment, which has got to be the best kind that you can have. It's just he's not going to test it quite to the same degree as Danny and Marc Marquez would.
Certainly. This does put to wonder, you know, what Danny's career is going to look like at this point. And
yeah,
I'm not saying that, you know, he should go or anything like that. It's not my purview. But perennial second, yeah. I don't know, Mark.
As when we were talking about this earlier than season, in fact, it might have been the show before the season started, I think it was the post Qatar test that I've been to, and I was talking to Stephen English. That's right. I think I was talking to Stephen English about it, and I said, you know, I just can't see why they'd keep employing him. And he said, because he's the perfect teammate. He picks up a lot of points. He can be a race winner. He's really experienced. He's not a disruptive influence. He does all the PR stuff quite, you know, not as well as Rossi, but then Rossi's doing it for himself, I suppose, you know. But he's not stroppy. There's no real downside to his character other than the fact that he's a bit reserved. So in that sense, you think, well, it can only ever be one champion. Do they want another Marquez where they might be beating each other up? You know, I don't know.
I think that in looking back at some of the more tenacious teammates, if you will, ones that were matched in skill and wins, that they both get better simply because they're pushing each other harder. And so
in that case, we definitely don't want to change him because we do not need Marquez getting any better. He's quite good enough to be going on with.
No, I think that'd be fine. Now, do we want to end up with a situation where there's only two guys that can win? No, we prefer at least four aliens. And right now we've got 3.2. I want to see the level of riding elevate because there's nothing more amazing than watching people do stuff that, well, they're already doing stuff that you and I look at and go, how did they do that? We want to see people doing stuff that, okay, he just rode a loop the loop and still lapped everybody. Keep pushing that farther. And on top of that, what it does is it forces other teams in lesser riders to up their skill too. It's not necessary. It's not a function of mechanics of pushing the bikes to go faster. It's a function of people pushing themselves to work harder.
Yeah, I guess I see your point. But it'd be very interesting to see if he comes back at Le Mans, talking about Pedrosa, how he gets on if he does come back at Le Mans. I wouldn't be massively surprised if they announce another delay. And, you know, it would be a real shame if he comes back, doesn't do very well, says no, it hasn't really fixed it, and we basically see Danny retire. That would be a shame. And I'd hope he'd remain involved somehow, but, you know, it's possible. We might see it. Because I think the alternative... I thought he was on a one-year contract.
That was two.
Would appear that, yeah, so if he is fit, he's here till the end of 2016. I really can't see them keeping him after that.
My worry, and I had this conversation with Kat, was that it was kind of a Gibernau fade out, and I don't want to see that with Danny. I think he's got more than that.
Yeah, but like you say, he's always the bridesmaid. In other news, Kyle Ride, who's been very impressive on the Superstock 600 and Supersport 600 and BSB, is getting a wildcard to ride in World Supersport at Donington. Jumping across series to Moto3, lots of gearbox problems for Honda in Moto3 this weekend. Bastianini, Masboom, McPhail had issues. Masboom, Bastianini in the race.
Do we know any more specifics on that? Because I tried to find them.
Yeah, well, it was mentioned in the commentary, and Matt Burr, I think he said something like the Honda gearbox problem raises its ugly head or rears its ugly head again. I'm thinking, what gearbox problem? I didn't know about this. So, don't know.
All right. Time to ping birdie, right?
Yeah. Right. After the Jerez test, for the Jerez test, Honda brought a new swing arm for Marquez to help to test, hoping it would help with rear grip. He wasn't going to test, but then he did. And I saw a thing, they only did something like 30, 31 laps as he's still trying to nurse this finger. But it was announced he's one engine down now. Turned out that the Austin engine was terminal. The one that he had to park, jump over and do that incredible QP lap. So he's only got four for the rest of the season now. Yeah, it could get tight. Rumor has it Honda have turned the engine up a bit to try and combat Ducati speed from Qatar, or they had done. Maybe that's what blew it. But I'm sure, and I know it's a different engine, but in Stoner's last year when he won in 2011, I'm sure someone said he only used two engines all season. I mean, if anyone can make durability, it's Honda.
I think the conversation about engines, especially as they come out in press releases and stuff, there's a bit of subterfuge going on. If an engine's terminal, I mean, okay, Mark, we've been talking about this for, I don't know, what, the last 5 years, right? When engine restrictions came into play. How many guys have we seen put to the back of the grid because they ran out of engines?
Rossi started from the pit lane once, didn't he? And wasn't it, didn't actually turn out to be actually in a bit of an advantage.
Yeah. So,
and I think that was the first season they brought it in.
Yeah. Is this really an issue at this point?
Not really. I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, it makes for good conversational fodder, but, it hasn't really seemed to affect the outcome of much.
I mean, last season you'd have said with Marquez, it's not a problem if he runs out of engines, put pedals on it, and it'll probably win. But not so much this season.
Put him on his pit scooter, right?
Yeah, just put him on those little things. Interestingly, talking about people falling foul of regulations, Julian Simon had to start from the back of the Moto2 grid despite qualifying 10th, because when they went to scrutineering, he was under the minimum bike and rider weight limit. The team said it was a combination of a new fairing and Julian hitting the gym extra hard.
You should have had a larger...
Like, come on, you should be able to tell what... And he should be weighed like a boxer as he's going to the, you know, to that session, surely.
Well, Martin, you've been in the paddock. Things get a little frenetic, and it's not that hard.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you just missed breakfast.
Yeah, yeah, or had an extra large poo.
I mean, a story like that, I want to know, yeah, and that too, what was the difference? I mean, was he 3 ounces off? Okay. And if so, they should have a little bit of an allowance, right?
There may be a, you know, you've got to be within 3 ounces or, you know, 0.3 of a kilogram of whatever, or one, you know, 100 grams of the target weight. Just stick extra heavy knee sliders on or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what Lorenzo was doing when he put double knee sliders on.
I think it's the time for an email to Mr. Webb to find out what the parameters are, because I know they're not I know they're not specified in the rules, and I've looked at it. It's like a very hard number, but you would think. You know, probably if you ran around in circles for 15 minutes and got his leathers all soaking wet, he would have passed, right? I want to know how big the difference was.
Okay. Yeah. Slightly less humorous regulation breaking. Carol Haneke, who there was an incident with Juan Fran Guevara on the cooldown lap, and Carol Haneke's got himself 5 penalty points, so he'll be starting for pit lane in Le Mans because he's now got 7. See, I thought 7 got you banned for a race, but maybe that's 10.
No, that makes you have to actually be a grid girl.
Yeah. Well, Carol Haneke's probably got, he's got the hair for it anyway. But Haneke crashed whilst chasing down the leaders during the race, remounted, battled with Guevara and several others for position. They had a touch, Guevara and Haneke. Nothing big. It was deemed a racing incident. But it clearly absolutely infuriated Haneke, because he then went and rammed up the inside of Guevara on the cooldown lap, and the Spaniards crashed and broke his collarbone. And, I mean, Harry has written the notes, and he's made the point, surely that should be a race suspension, because Guevara's now got 2 weeks to fix his collarbone. Now, okay, we know Colin Edwards got a podium like 2 days after breaking his collarbone, but that's Colin. You know,
Norio Haga won a race at Miller Motorsports Park the day after he broke his collarbone.
And I believe, certainly it was rumored, that was the first bone you'd ever broken in motorcycle racing.
Mm-hmm.
which, considering he was known as the Samurai of Slide, and I'm not convinced that meant he just slid the back wheel. I'm thinking that because he did tend to slide off track quite a lot.
Yeah.
He was a bit mental. That was amazing. But yeah, I agree with Harry. I think that should be an instant race suspension. Sorry, that's
well,
and that's the cool down lap. You know,
we've had some not only during cool down laps, but what was that practice start crash that we had the other day too? Somebody was coming up behind somebody else, and it wasn't this one. And just basically ended up. Go ahead.
Go on.
Okay. Endoed on top of him. I don't know. There's been some funny stuff going on.
I think it was Antonelli, wasn't it? It reached across and hit someone's kill switch and then rode off. Or someone did it to Antonelli. Harry mentioned it.
Although I did like how, I don't know if you noticed from this last weekend after whatever session it was that Elish, as they were both coming into the pits, came in and hit Paul's kill switch.
Yeah. there was a little interview actually with Paul, and he was back to grinning like a Cheshire cat, and he was saying, yeah, basically, Elish told me off for trying to get a toe. He said I was in his way on the racing line and everything, and going slowly. And so they'd obviously had a bit of a banter, but, you know, I got to love those guys.
Yeah. And Paul essentially had the attitude of, I don't care.
Yeah, and I was a bit disappointed when he had the Twitter spat with Scott Redding the other week. You know, yeah, Scott took him out, and probably Scott should have gone and apologized. I think, you know, we all know they've got a history for Moto2 of battling each other.
Right.
I wasn't aware that they'd had a particular falling out, but I'm guessing they're not going to be taking windy walks together.
yep, no Christmas cards coming.
No, but that was a bit disappointed. I was a bit disappointed in both of them, to be honest. And Scott did publicly apologize, but it was like a day late, and you think, no.
To be fair, I've seen a series of pictures that, because Scott said initially, you know, it wasn't me. You know, I went in and Paul was there. I've seen a series of pictures that clearly illustrates that Scott fell way before he got even close to Paul.
Yeah.
Didn't he say,
I thought he said Bradley Smith or someone had bumped him from behind, it, I thought was one of the excuses that came out. But I think he went in too hot and he just made a mistake. It's simple as that.
So, I mean, all of them should just go, fuck it, move on, right?
Mm.
Maybe not in that exact terminology, but
I think Mike Webb might be getting a little bit concerned because there's, I mean, we had Fanati throwing punches and kicks at people. We've got Carol Haneke doing what's frankly, I mean, I can't believe that they've not said, okay, that was, and they got a thing in football. That's not recklessly endangering, that was violent conduct, basically. And in football, that's an instant 3-match ban. Well, I think that should be a single race suspension. Do it again, son. That's you for the rest of the season. And if that means you're in breach of contract, you ain't going to get paid. You know, you can't have that. He's injured some.
Yeah. It's a weird thing to try and figure out. Put that into an off-season thing, because you got to remember, these guys are wearing some of the best safety gear in the world. And if they're not bashing each other off into the track, if at low speed, you know, they're taking a swing at each other, like, you know, has gone on for all of the racing worlds. You know, if you hit me in the head with your glove, it's really not going to hurt. It might get my attention. But
no, I mean, there was the hilarious last corner punch up at, was it Valencia? No, not Valencia. Where was it? Misano, possibly, between Hector Barbera in the 250s. Was it Hector Barbera and Iannone?
Yeah.
Took each other out in the last corner, and these two guys, it was really quite pathetic. It was like you're not really achieving anything there. You're just getting yourself out of breath.
Very true. All right, Martin, carry on, because there's a lot of details here, and this is where I let you run.
Yeah. Jorge apparently was wearing wet weather knee sliders. Someone did mention he was wearing big thick ones for Jerez due to the difference in corners. 8 right against 5 left. I suppose, was he wearing them on both sides or was he just wearing the double one?
No, he had them on both sides. And he got questioned about that in the post-race press conference. And he kind of just blew it up. He just felt like having a little... Well, I think the problem was he was going through, because the surface is so
abrasive
that he was going through a single one. So he wore two or whatever the wet weather ones. I always thought the wet weather ones were like two stacked, but apparently they now have... Of course.
So, yeah, proper made.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have thought that's less the difference in corners and more the fact that the surface is you know, takes them out. But
I would think they would change the material so that it was something that didn't wear down as quickly.
Yeah. And in capital letters, Harris also mentioned that he smashes the race lap record by 20 seconds.
He was
so if you haven't seen the result, guess what's going to happen when we get to the results? And that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
20 seconds quicker.
He didn't take a bath.
He didn't take it. No, he's learned that one, hasn't he? Do not jump into the Jerez Lake in full leathers because you might well drown. Yep. And I love the irony of the fact that the guy who pulled him out was wearing an HRC t-shirt. HRC t-shirt. Yeah, quite. Well, just to finish off about the testing, the Moto2 teams have been in Aragon this week, and Mattia Pessini, former, 125-250 Moto2 MotoGP rider, was testing in Aragon for the Federal Agostini Moto2 team. There is a rumor that there's a Kalex bike that they might run alongside Javier Simeon, but MotoGP.com is speculating that it's unlikely he'd be able to join in time for Le Mans. Probably looking at a wild card at Mugello and then see where it goes from there. But it'd be good to see Mattia Pessini back. He's shown some talent at times. And someone who showed enormous talent has sadly passed away this week, and that was Jeff Duke. Motorcycle hero I think pretty much Jeff Duke was retired when I was starting to get interested in bike racing. But this is back to the 60s and 70s. And
yep, 90 years old, on the Isle of Man. So left out of his homeland. I actually was poking around for... Actually, I was trying to figure out bat for the Isle of Man because I'm planning a trip there next year for some friends. And ended up at the Isle of Man Post. And just for you people out there in Motopod land... They have a huge commemorative set of photographs and stamps and coins and stuff of Jeff Duke for only 20 quid. It is a bargain, you know, postmarked Isle of Man, all this stuff, which means I probably just sold them all out. do a search in Google for IOM Post. Or we'll try and put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Not until I buy one.
Well, you said it too soon now.
No, I know.
That's like when we used to conveniently forget to remind the listeners that it was a transfer window in the MCN Fantasy League, which it's not this week, so don't panic, everybody.
Which we oh so conveniently forgot.
Yes. Right. Well, we had... the MotoGP circus returned or headed for Europe. The fourth race in now.
Europe.
Jerez. Yeah.
The Europe.
Sorry. Yes, of course. And in Moto3, young Fabio Quartararo got his first podium. Just 0.1 of a second from Danny Kent. Miguel Oliveira continued his good form. Brad Binder was fourth. Philip Ertl, who is starting to really impress me, was fifth. Carol Haneke. Hiss, naughty boy, was sixth. And yeah, Bastianini, seventh. Romano Fenati with a better qualifying result than recently was eighth. Nicola Antonelli, ninth. Jorge Navarro, tenth. Alexis Masbu was 11th. And Jakob Kornfarm was 12th. That was the first four rows. Efren Vasquez down in 17th. Bit surprising. But there you go. And and then we had the race, which was...
you just called Guerrero for podium in QP.
podium, sorry, pole position.
There you
Thank you. Thank you. They know what I mean. You don't have to be accurate. You just have to listen to Jack Burnicle and Nick Harris to know you can... Yeah. No, I know. I'm not as charismatic, so I need to be accurate. But this was pretty much back to what we've come to love and expect from Moto3. There was a fairly tight... I mean, we have had 8-9 riders at the front. This pretty much quite reasonably quickly broke down into a smaller group. Four or five, but there were some pretty damn good bust ups going on in there, and the lead was being swapped. We had Kent, we had Quartararo, Oliveira, Brad Binder was poncing around up there as well. Romano Fenati was pretty close to that leading group at times. Efren Vasquez made his way from 17th up
That was a valiant chase down, but the thing was he got up there for a while. Well, he was there initially.
He got there really quickly. He got there in like three or four laps.
But he just couldn't seem to make any headway through the group. And at first, you were watching it, and you're like, okay, he's just waiting for people to sort stuff out or somebody to fall down. But then he fell back, and still a valiant effort to be up there and to make up that gap, because it was a relatively large gap. And on a Moto3 bike, without any decent draft, that is not easy.
No, not at all. And it was funny to see the progression of the four leading riders, and they basically were swapping the lead. I mean, you can look at the lap chart and it tells you who was in the lead at the end of each lap, but by the next corner that would have changed. You know, we had Danny Kent, Miguel Oliveira, Brad Binder, and who's had a blindingly good race, and Fabio Quartararo, all, you know, just beating each other up like it was going out of fashion. And it was almost one of those, do you really want him to be in the lead going to the final turn 13? And the answer's probably no. Miguel Oliveira found himself there. Danny Kent, I think, was second as they approached, with Fabio Quartararo third and Brad Binder fourth. And Quartararo, he's 16, he's exuberant, everyone's telling him he's the new hot thing. I mean, that turn is made for crazy last-ditch lunges, and he certainly did one. And in doing so, he nearly crashed by banging into Miguel Oliveira, pushed him wide. Danny Kent popped through from second. Carter, having gone past him, relegating to third, he popped through and went, thank you very much, I'll have yet another win. Oliveira actually recovered incredibly well and came second.
He did.
Brad Binder was third, and Quartararo should have had his second podium, but actually came fourth.
That was yet another one of those races where in the last corner you're like,
yeah. And then we had Vasquez, who, like you say, I mean, he'd been fifth from about lap four, I think, all the way to the end. Oh, he might have. I think he got past Danny Kent at one point on one of the laps, but he was only 2 seconds behind. He just couldn't get that final, like you said, close that final gap. And then, what was he, 8 seconds behind him came Fenati, Bagnaia, Navarro, Bastianini, McPhee, Vinales, Jules Danilo, were all in this big bunch together. They got a little bit of a split away, Fenati, Bagnaia, Navarro. It was 6th, 7th, and 8th. The others were Bastianini 9th, John McPhee 10th, Isaac Vinales 11th. A bit quiet weekend for Isaac. Mm-hmm. Jules Danilo was 12th. Livio Loi still showing improvement from previous years, 13th. Jorge Martin was 14th, and Alexis Masbu 15th. We lost Jakob Kornfile, Philip Ertl, Hiroki Ono, Alessandro Tannucci, Nicola Antonelli went down, Gabriel Rodrigo, and Maria Herrera, which is a shame because I was looking forward to seeing her at the track she knew. So there was the race. And it's really played into Danny Kent's hands, because whatever happens at Le Mans, he'll still be leading the championship when they leave.
Yep.
Danny's on 9.
We actually have the lap chart here and I'm looking through it while you're running through this, and I'm like, it was lap 10. Danny went from first to fifth, and you remember that shuffle.
It was Yeah.
It was like everybody came through and just left no room. But he started his match back up, and it took 1, 2, 3, 4 laps, and he was back in lead again.
Yeah. It's strange. He really is showing such maturity. I mean, when he went up to Moto2 and it really didn't work out on the Tech 1, he went back down again. I just thought, oh, it's a step backwards. You know, is that really going to knock his confidence? And far from it. He's absolutely, he's on a really good bike and a really good team. But he really is showing really good racecraft. But yeah, he's on 91 points. Efren Vasquez is second with 60.
That's putting it rather mildly at this point.
Yeah, and the interesting point that people keep making, Matt Burton, Nick Harris, who I generally watch, but also in the written press, David Emmett's made the point, and Harry and Dave the other week were making a point. A lot of these fast laps he's doing in qualifying and the race, he's doing it, well, in the qualifying particularly, he's doing it on his own. He's not getting a tow.
Totally standalone. Yep.
And it's almost like he's actually looking for clear track. He's doing a Lorenzo. Look, I don't want people around me. I just want to go out there on my own. Or a Stoner. And he's just saying, I want to go out on my own. When those bikes, you know, we're all told you need to get a tow to get a fast lap. Clearly not Danny. So good for him. Yes, so 91 points. Efren Vasquez on 60. Fabio Quartararo on 52. So only 8 behind. 5 behind him is Enea Bastianini with Brad Binder in 5th on 44. And onwards and backwards. I've got to say, I really feel sorry for Miguel Oliveira because I think he would have, you know, without being punted by Quartararo, he would have won that and he'd have become the first ever Portuguese rider to win a GP. And if he had, Oliveira would have 3 third places, 2 second places, and 1 win. So that'd be quite cool. Nice symmetry there.
He's still right there in the points, and I don't think he is by any stretch of the amount. Yeah, he'll do fine. And on top of that, I still, looking over at my bookcase up here, have some great Motopod Portugal stickers. So when he wins, I will send some off to any Portuguese fans that would like them.
Absolutely. However, he is 58 points behind Danny Kent. So that's. I know it's early. We've only had 4 rounds of the 18, but that's quite a gap.
Yep.
And on to Moto2, and returning to Spain, also saw the return to the front of qualifying of Tito Rabat, world champion, wearing number 1. I mean, the season so far, I've been thinking maybe you should have taken a MotoGP ride, even if there was only a mediocre one available. Because where can you go? How can you improve on being champion? You can't. It's a brave decision to stay where he is. It's a great team. We know that. And I suspect he will start to push up now. But Tito.
He didn't have a seat to go to, Martin. I mean, it made sense to me.
I believe he had offers.
I know, but I mean, a real seat.
That's the thing. He may have, the offers may have been NGM Ford, or it may have been Asper, you know, what was Drive M7, and is sometimes, it would appear. But at least he'd have, you know, it's all going to change next year, and he'd have established himself with a team. We know he's got an incredible work ethic. He seems a very personable guy. Ian Wheeler says he's completely bonkers, but you know, I think that's a compliment from Ian, who's obviously a bit bonkers himself, being sure he's ex-artillery. I might be wrong there. Sorry, Ian, if you're not, or if you are indeed, we all have our crosses to bear. Alex Rins was second in qualifying, and the front row was completed by Jonas Folger, who's really having a good season, except for the, you know, the races where he's not having a good race and he's coming 16th or wherever he was. Tom Luthy, steady.
I love your disclaimers.
Jonas Folger was third. Yeah, Tom Luthy was fourth. Takaki Nakagami, there you go, Dave, I said it properly for once, was fifth. Was he coming, returning to the form we saw 2 years ago? Time would tell. Sam Lowes was six, surprisingly slow for Sam this weekend, although that's still less than half a second behind. Sandra Cortese was in seventh place. Axel Pons, continuing to show a lot of pace, was in eighth. And the surprise, I think, was Johann Zarco down in ninth, back of the third row. Julien Simon, Xavier Simeon and Simone Corsi, there's lots of Sims in there, were 10th, 11th, 12th. Baldessari, Schrotter and Morbidelli were 15th. Agata continues to struggle in 16th. Alex Marquez continues to struggle in 17th. And Mika Kallio continues to struggle, and he was in 18th.
But that's just qualifying.
That's just qualifying, yeah. And the speed-ups weren't as dominant or weren't doing as well, the speed-up chassis, as we've seen them, particularly with Sam Lowes. But hopes were high for the race. And I've only just watched the race today. I didn't catch it the weekend. I was driving back from work when it was on. And it was strange. It was really dramatic, but you had to wait to the end for the dramatic bit. But it was, even though, if you look at the lap chart, it looks quite kind of processional. And we had Tito Rabat leading the first nine laps. Folger was second. Luthi was for the first nine laps until they swapped places. And the fascinating thing I found was Tito couldn't break Folger, but Tito just made one mistake, ran wide. Folger got through, and then he couldn't break Tito.
Right.
And the two of them were pretty much together right up to the end. And that is the old thing, isn't it? The margins of success and not failure, but winning and not winning at this level are so tiny. You know, it's really impressive to see. And we also had the incredible advance of Alex Rins. I mean, he's just fantastic to watch. He didn't start that badly, but he was a reasonable distance behind. He was fifth at the end of the first lap, and he just closes and closes and closes. The really impressive one had to be Zarco, though. Coming from, where did we say he was? I'm trying to think. Where was he in the grid? He was ninth. And Jesus, what a change in that kid.
Yep. No doubt. That for me was probably one of the highlights.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And he's so mature now. I mean, he was Jules Cluzel and Johann Zarco, I thought they've both been brought up in a region of France famed for its, mental diet or something, because they were just idiots, the pair of them, brilliant riders, but could absolutely have the red mist descend and just go nuts and crash, or, crash into people, or, about to win a race, sit up and look over your shoulder and go, oh, shoot, yeah, Nico Tirol's going to beat me now, as Zarco did famously at Misano.
But ultimately, that didn't work out very well.
No. it wasn't the best thing. I'll tell you what else I found interesting was Alex Marquez. I'm wondering, is he starting to run out of time? Having said that, he went backwards to 20-something, I think, at one point. He may not have been 20-something, but he was certainly way down and went further back. And then he made some reasonably good progression, as did Louis Salom. But anyway, back to the race. We had this group of Rabat, then Folger, and then halfway through the race, Folger took the lead from Rabat. Tom Luthi sticking with him in third for ages and being closed down by Alex Rins. Initially went past him, putting him back to fourth, and then Zarco went past. So we had, for the last seven or eight laps, we had Jonas Folger, Tito Rabat, Alex Rins, Johann Zarco, Tom Luthi, all pretty close together, weren't they? I mean, it wasn't quite nose to tail. Then we had Xavier Simeon coming along behind, and Franco Morbidelli. But again, going into the last lap, the last corner, and Alex Rins went to make a move to try and get past Tito Rabat, clipped his back wheel, and crashed. And you just think, it is understandable. It is understandable. You had to have a go, but you know, Alex Rins has really struck me this season as having a lot more than I gave him credit for in the previous two or three. You know, we knew he was quick, but he seemed a bit brittle. And then this season, he really seems to have shown maturity and, you know, really clever, quite ruthless. And I'm going to put that down. I think that was just it was an error. And I'm sure he'd say the same himself. Unfortunately, that
one would hope so, right?
Yeah, but I mean, an error as in it was an honest mistake. It wasn't being stupid. He wasn't trying to do a Marquez on Lorenzo or a Rossi on Gibernau and punt Rabat out of the way. I don't think he intended to touch him front wheel versus rear wheel. You normally lose. Rabat nearly comes out of the seat, which allows Zarco past. So we had Folger, Zarco, Rabat, which Folger must have been pretty miffed at, seeing as he's second in the championship, because he would have been 5 points closer, or sorry, 4 points closer, if Rabat could have come in front of Zarco, but he didn't. So the question is, Jonas Folger, is he a serious title contender?
That is a valid question. Well, four races in, how do you know?
That's a fair point.
Yeah, there's so much more that can happen between now and then. You know, we were looking at the success of Sam Lowe's over the earlier races, and Martin, you have to be a bit chuffed because the better success across the race series right now, and in fact, I wanted to talk to you about this because, especially with World Superbike going on, it's a bit astounding. This is your guys' year, even if you're not in country.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's been incredible. Dr. Martin Raines has been absolutely inundated with people saying, when was the last time we had three British riders on the you know, podium of a, you know, of World Series racing? And, you know, it's the World Superbikes is basically the Brit Pack. And I'm sure we can save discussion for that until after the next World Superbike race. Sam this weekend though, did he crash? No, he didn't crash. He just went backwards. And I did have a look. He had an unrideable rear tire and he said he's not having to go at Dunlop. In fact, he was a really self-aware and honest statement he put out. And he just said, look, I've made lots of mistakes, which has cost my team. It's just really frustrating when I didn't make any mistakes and I felt really strong and I'd had a brilliant, you know, even though he only qualified sixth, he was close. He felt really good for the race, had a great warm-up. And then he was 3 seconds a lap slower than his warm-up pace.
There were, if you remember way back when I was, and the translation for an unrideable rear tire can often mean that it's spinning on your rim.
Yeah. We've seen that before, haven't we? But not for a long time. I'm trying to remember the last time I saw.
Oh, it's not at all uncommon, but if it's really bad, if it's really bad, there's no easy solution.
I can't remember who it was. It was just after they started doing the super slow-mo, and they showed an example of someone. It was in MotoGP, not Moto2, and I can't remember who it was. And the wheel was spinning on the rim, and they said, you know, the drive is turning the wheel hub. Unfortunately, the tire isn't staying with it. It's just coasting, so you're not getting any drive out.
Yep.
And if it was something like that, then that's really, really disappointing. What a ride by Johann Zarco. We've mentioned that. Alex Marquez. I'm really shocked. I thought he would go the way of Maverick Vinales in his season last season. Alex Rins this season, I thought he'd be battling with Marquez just like last season. They'd both be thinking, oh my goodness. And when you look at what Marc Marquez was doing in his first few Moto2 races, he was winning them. Not all of them, but some of them. I'm just wondering how long Alex Marquez has before people say, nah, he's more of a Sandro Cortese or a Nico Tirol. You know, I'm not suggesting that he's going to be heading across the World Superbikes anytime soon. And it is only four races in. But I can't see any visible sign of improvement. They're on the good chassis that nearly everybody's running. He's in probably the best Moto2 team to be in, historically, certainly. Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. Unless, of course, it just happens that, despite what Mark keeps saying, he's not quite as good as his older brother.
I'm going to reserve judgment for the moment.
yeah, certainly. And we have seen people before have a quiet first season and absolutely take off. But
yeah,
I suppose we've been so used to the Marquez name being able to achieve what appears to be the impossible, or certainly the improbable, that we almost come to expect, you know, miracles. And he's not Mark. And maybe that bike, just something about the bike just doesn't quite suit him, and another one we're doing better. But interesting.
True. Is that where you are, or where am I? Can you hear the air raid sirens in the background?
I think that must be where you are. Are you being air raided?
I know they do tests every so often. I just think it's kind of cool. Ladies and gentlemen, if this is the last Motopod, know that we went out valiantly.
Absolutely. Although I must admit, they're unlikely to be able to get you and me simultaneously. If they do, then the bomb was so big, I don't think there's anybody left listening.
If they do, well done.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah, well, I'm
really annoyed with you, whoever you are. So on to the big boys, MotoGP Q1, moving blithely on in the face of mutually assured destruction. We had, in Q1, there weren't any major surprises down in Q1, except maybe Yoni Hernandez and Danilo Petrucci. But then someone always sort of dips out. Scott Redding got himself into Q2 straight away, which is one of the people who we had been seeing in Q1. But Danilo Petrucci and Yoni Hernandez came good, just pipped Hector Barbera, who just continues to do really good qualifying times, which really annoys me because he never does anything in a race. I think just let someone who can actually do something get up there. Maverick Vinales.
Right. Okay. So.
No, I know that's a stupid thing to say, and I'm a stupid person, but I don't know. I just think.
I get part of your point. Petrucci, on the other hand, has been very consistent this year. And so serious props for him, because we knew back when he was on a crappy bike that he was going to be a good rider. And he has been continuing to prove that riding on the Pramac team bike, which is closer this year, you know, than it has been maybe in years past to a factory spec bike. With all the Ducatis that we've got on the grid. I still give props for Hernandez because...
And apparently they should get GP15s during this season, the Pramac.
They'll get,
at the moment, they're still on 14.2, but they should be getting 15s. I think probably it's going to be the summer break.
Yeah, they'll get GP 14.98, you know.
Yeah.
Might be one or two little bits left off it, but I carry on.
Well, I was going to say, I'll tell you what we did see there, which was I thought was really good to see, was Alvaro Bautista was fifth in Q1. Now, okay, he's not going through, but that's the first time really we've seen the Aprilia getting ahead of a large group of riders. Behind him was Hiroshi Ayama, Eugene Laverty, Nicky Hayden, Stefan Bradl. You know,
one point this year, dude. One point.
Yeah. Alex Espargaro showed us what that bike can do. Yeah. I mean, Stefan was 0.2 ahead of Loris Baz, who's a rookie, who's come from World Superbikes.
I'm going to point out to you, there's nothing to say that the bike that Stefan is on is the same bike that Aleix was on. We're talking year over year. Parts can disappear. Parts can be changed, and obviously personnel are different. So,
Sandwiched in between was Carol Abraham on his Honda, Then behind Loris Bowers, we had Jack Miller, Mark D'Amelio, Alex De Angelis, and sadly and predictably, bringing up the rear was Marco Melandri. Although he was only 0.1 behind Alex De Angelis. I suppose that's an achievement of sorts. Then we went through to Q2, and Lorenzo dominated. In fact, he was pretty... Certainly, he didn't completely dominate. For day one was not great for the Yamahas in terms of position at the end of it, but I suppose that doesn't really matter. But he was the only rider getting to 137s. It's nearly 0.4 ahead of Marc Marquez, who was second, obviously riding with his broken finger. Andrea Iannone got on the front row. Paul Espargaro did a brilliant job, and for a while, it did look like it might get pole position, but, you know, they always change in the last minute or two. Valentino Rossi was in the middle of the second row in a Espargaro sandwich, which sounds something like you get from a very posh food shop. And Aleix Espargaro was sixth. Cal Crutcher was seventh. Andrea Dovizioso, eighth, with a poor qualifying for Dovi. Ninth was Yoni Hernandez, who just everyone loves. He's so great. He's so cheerful and rides his bike sideways, which is just brilliant to watch. Granny Smith was 10th. Danilo Petrucci was 11th. Scott Redding was 12th. So that was the first four grids, the first four rows of the grid decided in Q2. And then the race. And
I'm still laughing at the Espargaro Rossi sandwich metaphor.
Yes. Well, I'm thinking that we used to call him Asparagus Brothers, didn't we? And
it's true.
An asparagus sandwich. But yeah, Rossi, something red in between two. So you're looking at something like Carpaccio, you know, that Italian raw beef.
Yeah,
because that's pretty red between two slices of asparagus.
Asparagus bread? It's not going to work.
It's not going to work. The race was a masterclass. I don't think there's any other way to put it, is there?
Yep. Well,
it was a lesson in domination.
I believe the term you're looking for is textbook Jorge.
Yeah, he was entirely dominant and led every single lap, and slowly but surely just pulled away and pulled away and pulled away from Marquez. Marquez was second for every lap. Initially, Paul Espargaro was third, but then Rossi came past him reasonably quickly. And at one stage, it did look like Rossi was starting to close at the gap. And Nick Harris and Matt Burt did a brilliant job of really trying to inject some enthusiasm into their commentary, saying, could we have Argentina all over again? Albeit this time it's for second place, not third. And no, as soon as the gap got down to about 1.2, 1.1, Marquez obviously saw his pit board and went, and that's close enough. He wasn't weakening, the tyres weren't going off, and he I wouldn't say pulled the pin, but he masterfully controlled the gap. But Rossi did excellently. You know, he came third, he's still leading the world championship. Cal Crutchlow came from, I think, where did he qualify? Seventh or eighth?
Yep.
He came through fourth, but from lap seven, that didn't change. Paul Espargaro from lap seven was in fifth.
Yeah, there were a lot of gaps. It was... You could say the race was processional, given the prior races that we've had so far this year, to watch Jorge go out at a track that we know that he does well at and to put on that kind of performance, to me, is still a pleasure to watch. Was it the best race of the year? No.
No, it wasn't high math exciting. It was, and it wasn't the tense, you know, the Jaws music playing as it did in Argentina as Rossi came hunting. And we didn't have that incredible crescendo of excitement like we did at Qatar. But I don't want to say it was boring or dull, because you cannot criticize someone for being that good. And he is watching, it's poetry watching him go.
Yep.
You know, I mean, Harry jokingly said, I wonder if Martin will suddenly leap back onto the Lorenzo fandom bandwagon. And I was thinking, I mean, Harry summed it up brilliantly, actually, last week or the week before, when he said he's more a fan of racing than racers. And to be honest, I've always pretty much been, I like to think I've been fairly objective about Lorenzo. I just enjoyed seeing someone come up who could challenge Rossi. And remember when he came up in 08, we spoke about this, you know, a year or two later when I joined the team, I didn't expect to like him at all. I really, really thought I was going to dislike this kid because he was a little brat in Moto 2 and in 250 and 125. And he would suddenly came up in a tumble. But I'm not a huge fan of the person, having you know, witnessed some stuff over the last few months. But you can't take anything away from that. That was just, you know, it was like you say, it's the same millimeter of track every lap at exactly the same speed. At exactly the, and his lap time consistency is just incredible. Reminded me of Cal Crunchlow when he was on Tech Tour, and they said, do you get to see Jorge's data? And he said, yeah, sometimes I wish I didn't.
Anyway.
Okay, I get that. The finishing order, we had Lorenzo 1, Marc Marquez was 2nd, Valentino Rossi was 3rd, which was the podium. Marquez, actually, interestingly, as on his blog, has said, even if I'd been at my best, I don't think it would have made any difference. Because he's saying his finger caused him some discomfort. He doesn't feel it slowed him down at all, which is, you know, very magnanimous of him. So hats off to Jorge for that. Cal Crutcher was 4th, Pol Espargaró 5th, Andrea Iannone was 6th, Aleix Espargaró was 7th. Pol Espargaró and Andrea Iannone were just less than half a second apart, but that was, I think, the closest gap till we get back to 10th, 11th. So we had Aleix Espargaró in 7th, Bradley Smith 8th, Dovi was 9th, having had a lap or two where he really struggled. He just kept running wide. It was like he was outbreaking himself. I don't know if he lost concentration or if he had a problem. At one point, I think he was down in something like 22nd. He was certainly way, way, way down the order. In fact, no, he was plumb last. At the start of lap two, he was 25th. So to come back to 9th, good damage limitation, you could say. Yoni Hernandez was 10th. And just pipped Maverick Viñales, who just pipped Danilo Petrucci. Viñales there in a Ducati sandwich. Then was Scott Redding just behind them. Hector Barbera just behind him. Bit more of a gap. Álvaro Bautista got the last point. And well done to him. That's the first point Aprilia have got. Then we had Stefan Bradl, Nicky Hayden, Eugene Laverty, and Marco Melandri. If you're wondering, oh, sorry, then Jack Miller. Behind Marco Melandri, that's right, I think Jack had run off. Aleix De Angelis and Mike D'Amelio was last. Also, I think Ed crashed and remounted, or certainly ran off and remounted. Hiroshi Ayama unfortunately retired, as did Loris Baz and Carol Abraham. So, the result of that all is that, yeah, I was just saying about Dovi. What on earth happened to him on that first lap where he was just outbreaking himself and running on the gravel and all sorts, plumb down in 25th. Works his way back up to 9th. It's very uncharacteristic.
Okay, well, so let's go back to, dude, anything can happen on the first lap, right? We know that.
He didn't seem to be involved with anyone else, though. It just seemed to be Dovi sort of doing a Max Biaggi.
I don't know. What do you say? The first lap is full of excitement, angst, idiocy, and who knows what else. And sometimes, you know, that's why they talk about races settling out, right?
Yeah, I suppose the point I'm making is it's uncharacteristic. If it was Randy Depugnier, it'd just be like, that's Randy. Randy's just being Randy, you know. But with Dovi, he's normally
with no disrespect so to you, controlled. To you, Randy.
No disrespect at all to Randy. He's got he's got a lovely wife. Did I just say that out loud? Sorry. No disrespect to Randy. He was a great racer and he was a brilliantly entertaining racer. I mean, if you're looking at the current crop, you know, I mean, Scott Redding can sometimes get a bit exuberant, as we saw in Argentina. No, Austin. Austin? Argentina. Where was he? He wiped out Paul. Argentina. Austin. One of those. Yoni Hernandez has got an entertaining style, but he doesn't really crash that much. He just has his bike catch fire under his butt. But anyway, I was quite surprised to see Dovi. And disappointed as I have him in my fantasy league team.
I'm still quite, have a bit of wonderment about the entire situation that happened with Yanni's bike going up in flames in Argentina. That was... As an aside, or I guess not up in flames, down in flames. It was more underneath the back. But
yeah, but and get hot enough to burst that rear tire.
It did not burst the rear tire. It burst the rear suspension. The tire itself still had air in it.
Right.
That's a different story altogether. More internet pundits than me have explored that one to no proper avail. Anyway, regardless of what happened to Dubby on the first lap, we still have to look at the fact that he's only 15 points off of being in first place this year. Mm-hmm. Who would have guessed that in December?
Who'd have thunk it? Yeah. We've got Rossi on 82, Dovi on 67, Lorenzo now. I mean, Jorge, everyone's perception was until this weekend, he was having a disastrous season.
Right.
Well, he's 20 points behind Rossi, fair enough, but it is only 20 points. And, you know, again, it's consistency. Marquez, fourth with 56. Iannone, fifth with 50. Cal Crutchlow, sixth with 47. Bradley Smith, 36. Aleix Espargaró, 31. Poland, 26. Maverick Vinales, top 10. 20 points.
Right. Rossi's lead is by no means safe. You remember that the interview that I did with Guintoli a couple of years ago, maybe? And it was like the third or fourth race into World Superbike. Mm. And I said to him, I said, well, you've got a comfortable 30-point lead going into the next race, and you just started laughing.
Yeah.
He's like,
especially for those boys when they're doing,
double
races.
Yeah.
There's 50 points up for grab every weekend.
In his lovely French UK accent, he's like, oh, mate, that is just not comfortable. And he did not go on. I'd have to go back and dig it up.
Someone said to Bayliss, didn't they, in the 2003 season, was it 2003 when Colin caught him and really shouldn't have done? And they said, what would you consider a comfortable lead? And he said, 60 points, 60 point gap with one round left. And you're thinking, that'll do it.
That was
less than that. He wasn't happy.
That was 2002 where everything came down to Imola. By the way, I will be having a chat in, 3 weeks or so with Troy Bayliss live, or at least person to person, because he is coming over to the United States to run our flat track series.
And I've heard he's going to take up dirt tracking,
And I've already got things set up to go to the Sacramento Mile, which is a great 1 mile flat track. And so I'll be doing that and getting some reports.
How can one 1 mile flat dirt oval be any better than another one?
It's literally, Martin, in a strange way, it's all about the dirt and how it's prepared.
The quality of the dirt.
Right. But also that each one can have a little bit slightly different banking in the turns.
They're not flat, are they? I thought the point was it was absolutely like Speedo. It's absolutely flat. There's no banking. No?
Well, okay.
I'm so ignorant about this.
Okay. So I will challenge you. Go watch some European Speedway, right? Those start as flat tracks. What happens as the night goes on? They turn into bank tracks because all the dirt gets thrown to the outside of the corner.
That's a fair point.
Yes. That's what happens in this situation. You'll hear terms, and people that know any type of dirt racing have heard terms like cushion. Cushion is where you'll get this little thing that you can kind of get your tire up against. Road racing fans, and I know that we're supposed to be talking about MotoGP, and we wander off into World Superbike and BSB and Moto America and all this stuff, but go out to a flat track race. Just watch it. It is cool stuff. And the cool thing is you can see the entire track because it ain't that big.
Yeah. Well, when you do speak to him,
yep.
Can you ask him if, I'm trying to think which season it was, it might have been his last championship season, which would have made it 2010? 12. 12? Was it that recent?
Yeah, I think it's 12.
No, I think it was earlier than that.
Was it?
When at Phillip Island, he let Biaggi go past him, knowing he was going to overcook into, it was one of the big right-handers, I'm pretty sure it was PI. And as he cut back inside to retake the lead, he looked over his shoulder, and I want to know, I'm convinced he said, wanker.
Okay.
As he looked. I'm pretty sure that he would have said, wanker.
Martin.
Yeah.
And dear guests out there, just in case Martin forgets, send me that an email so I'll remember. It's a rather detailed question to ask about a year that you're not even certain of. Although I think I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was classic Biaggi and classic Bayliss, where if someone overtakes me, well, he didn't even wait till the next corner. He just got him back on the same corner. But he knew that Max was going to do it. And Max invariably did it, you know, outbraked himself and everyone else. Going back to MotoGP, though, and the points. Where did we get to? Maverick Viñales is 10th with Suzuki on 20 points. Danilo Petrucci, 19. Scott Redding, 13. Yonny Hernandez, 12. Danny Pedrosa, 10 points. Obviously, only been to the one round. Hector Barbera, 10. Jack Miller, 6 points.
Disappointment.
Yeah. As I think Harry was being a bit... not enough of an apologist for Jack Miller, but I think, you know, Harry was cutting him a bit of slack. It's what you'd expect from someone jumping from Moto3 to MotoGP who's so young and new to it. It's not what we were led to expect from what we saw him last year. But then, to be fair, when you look at the difference in competition and the amount of change they've made, he's doing about the same as Alex Marquez is in Moto2.
Okay, that's true.
Now, Alex Marquez has got more points, but the transition he's made hasn't been quite so great. And the riders he's against aren't quite as experienced and good as the people Jack Miller's up against.
I'll give Jack Miller this. He's not made a lot of mistakes. So
No.
That in a formative year is even more important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if you look at the other customer Hondas, he's actually leading them. He's ahead of Hiroshi Ayama, who's on a factory Honda, but then, you know, he's doing as much testing as he's racing. He's ahead of Nicky Hayden. He's ahead of Eugene Laverty. And Stefan Bradl, 1 point, as we mentioned. Anyway, I think that was the MotoGP race pretty much tucked up. Then we had a test. We had Lorenzo and Rossi were the quickest. I mean, it's testing.
Yeah.
One day here test. Can't read too much in it. Cal Crutch was third. Alessio Spargo was fourth. Mark Marquez was fifth. Didn't do many laps of testing his swing arm. Bradley Smith was sixth. Johnny Hernandez seventh. Scott Redding eighth. Maverick Viñales ninth. Blah, 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 blah. All the way down. Marco Melandri was still last, obviously. But, you know, that people would have been testing different bits. What is interesting, though, is when you look at the lap count. Now, we know that Marquez was nursing his fingers, so he only did 31. Lorenzo did 52. Normally he does more than Rossi. Rossi did 66. Maverick Viñales, 79. Nicky Hayden, Eugene Laverty, 73.
But wait, get to Ironman Redding.
Yeah. Scott Redding, I'm trying to find him, did 105 laps. And his fastest lap was on the 104th. Wow. And you know what?
I think that may be a record.
That's more than Nicky Hayden used to do. Nicky was a prolific tester when he'd go out and he'd just run lap after lap after lap. But look at the lowest. Marquez with his knack of fingers nursing. But then you got Marco Melandri did 19. No, I don't know. Maybe they had a bike problem. I mean, I was sort of joking the other week when I was saying that, you know, maybe he's, what he's trying to do is crash so many bikes that there aren't any left by the race day each race weekend. I don't know. I can't see it lasting a whole season. It's not healthy for him. It's not healthy for the team. It's not doing anyone any favours. And if this rumour that that we'd heard that he's going to Yamaha World Superbikes next season, just let him go. Get someone in who might be able to do something.
It's very complicated.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exhaust, of course. But you know, if the point was him to be there for next year for Michelin tires coming back and the new spec ECU and everything and his development skills... if he's not going to be there next year, then what do you want him for?
I'm pretty sure that's off the menu. I think they're filling a spot that they had to through their contractual obligations to have a two-rider team.
Yeah. Anyway, this weekend we also had British Superbikes running at Alton Park because the races were on Monday because it's bank holiday. And in race one...
I'm going to point out to listeners that both Martin and I have not watched this yet.
No, we haven't seen it, so I'm afraid you're not going to get any real insight other than in race one, Tommy Bridewell won on the Tyco BMW S1000RR. Josh Brooks was second. Shane Byrne was third. Stuart Easton, fourth. Richie Kiernari was fifth. James Ellison, sixth. Down we went. Race two... Stuart Easton won, but only after Richie Kiernari took out Shane Byrne as they were battling for the lead at the Hislop chicane, which is the bottom of the big hill. Clay Hill? No, can't remember what it's called. As you come down the big hill at the back, on the back.
I want to say Craner Curves from one of the...
No, no, yeah. That's Donington, isn't it? But,
oh, yeah, all right.
Yep, that would have been a long way out. Into the hissy chicane, and Keo afterwards said he went straight away to shake. He apologized, said, completely my fault. Yeah, I just got it all wrong, which is very decent of him. And they that meant Stuart Easton won, James Ellison was second, Josh Brooks was third, his double podium. Michael Laverty was fourth, Jason Allen was fifth. We also lost Tommy Bridewell during that lap after his success in the first race. Shane Byrne and Richie Kiernari did finish, but unfortunately they weren't able to finish anywhere sort of actually near the points. So the standings now, James Ellison's still leading on 109 points, Shane Byrne is 101, Josh Brooks on 94, Stuart Easton is on 80, Tommy Bridewell's on 53, Jason Allen's on 42. But I would expect that to change because Kiernari seems to be getting his mojo back and is in eighth place at the moment. Remember, it's the top six go through to the showdown at the end of the season, but there's a long way to go.
Yep.
Race is coming up. The next MotoGP. Go on.
There are a few people that I'm kind of surprised about. I figured Linfoot was going to do better this year. I figured Walker would probably be up there. I'm impressed with O'Halloran, just his consistency, being that far up, and I'm pleased, given my fantasy racing league, that Stuart Easton took all those points this weekend because it was very helpful.
Yes, yeah. I'm glad that I suppose you can call him a veteran now, James Ellison. Is doing very nicely too.
You suppose you can call him a veteran? Yeah.
Well, if you say that, then sometimes people be like, "You're calling me old." I'm thinking, no, I'm not calling you old. I'm 50 this year, so I'm not calling James Ellison old. But you know, he's experienced. So the next race we've got is World Superbikes this coming weekend at Imola, which is a track I do enjoy watching racing at. Then we've got Le Mans MotoGP on the 17th of May. Can't help remembering that when I interviewed him during the test at Qatar, Maverick Vinales said it is the one track he's really looking forward to most. Hmm. I'm sure he's looking forward to all of them. Also on the 17th of May, we have Moto America returns to the Virginia International Raceway, which I'm told is commonly called VIR. What's it like, Jim? Good track?
Yeah, it's a very neat track. Turn one is pretty iconic. Very, very, very high speed right hand corner. Le Mans, we can pretty much guarantee rain because it just always happens, right?
Yeah, I made the mistake actually when Maverick said he's really looking forward to Le Mans. I was like, wow. And I wasn't suggesting he was saying it because it was wet, but my train of thought went, it often rains at Le Mans. Actually, that will, you know, that often, as the problem they even then was quite obvious, they lacked top speed. You know, that can help. And so I said, oh, yeah, and it might rain. And he went, no, because of that. So I had my first win there. I've done really well. I was like, yeah, well, sorry. Okay, I'll just piss this lad off. I'm looking.
I'm sorry. I'm pretty sure for BIR, for Moto America, Scott Bolton, I think he said he was going to be out there for us as well. So we'll be able to get some interviews from that.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So we should have some stuff for you guys next week.
BSB are having their
late 2 weeks.
BSB are having their late winter break. We call it late winter in the UK. Late winter goes on till early winter. Late winter finishes in November, and then you get early winter from November to December. Then you get midwinter from January to March, and then it's early late winter all the way through back to November.
This is what they based the Game of Thrones television show off of.
Absolutely. Yes. Winter is coming.
No, winter's really here all the time.
Yes. Yes, we're more what they call the Night's Watch than the Stark, something like that.
You're on the wall and you should be.
Yes, absolutely. And it's very cold. Well, I'm not, obviously. I've been sent to the Summer Isles or wherever.
Yeah, you got exiled is what happened.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, no dragons and no very, very beautiful princesses, unfortunately. Well, obviously, apart from Sharon, but she's more of a queen. Snetterton, quickly.
But you digress.
Right. We digress. Let's go back to bike racing and the real world. 21st of June is the next BSB at Snetterton, which is a really, should be a crap track. Old airfield, flat.
Yep.
It actually really throws up some amazing racing sometimes, so that should be good. Yes, and we'll hope to get Dave along to Snetterton. I think he's hoping to go to Snetterton with the team that he's managing, who are doing really, really well, young Jordan Weaver. So it would be really nice if someone could donate us a few pence, because Dave has to get his awesome car from Lincolnshire all the way down to Norfolk, picking a few beetroot on the way for his lunch. I'm not really sure that a West Country accent is appropriate for someone coming from the East Midlands. He's virtually a Brummie.
I'm not sure you did a very good job doing it anyway.
No, me neither. No. West Country, Norfolk. Interesting. I'll tell you about that one day, because it is the accent shares the same roots. I digress. I do.
Yes, you do.
I think at 1:39, you better call that. We better call that a day.
Not a bad job done.
We've only talked over each other quite a lot, but it's what we do. It's what we do. It's part of the homely charm of Jim and I on Motopod.
If we didn't talk, it wouldn't be much of a radio show, would it?
No, it would be like this. And there's only so much of that I can stand. Silence is the enemy. Remember that. Make noise and sound. It's good.
You know what we could do? Start a reading podcast. So you have a reading podcast where all it is it starts off. All right, okay, you have your book, your couch is over there. Make sure you have a refresher. No, bad idea.
We're going to read page 17.
Turn.
And you just hear a page gently leaf across each time. Well, of course, everybody now reads them on Kindles and iPads and stuff. Where's the book gone? Where have I put my Kindle, actually, whilst I think about it?
Time to go.
Wrote a quick decaffeinated coffee down my neck. No Guinness tonight, because I'm flying tomorrow morning.
All right.
And I will speak to you very soon. We'll get these off to Harry now. And thank you for tuning in, because by definition, anyone who heard me say that has actually downloaded the podcast and chose to listen to it. Strange people.
Oh, and I want to thank the archive.org people for archiving all of our ancient episodes. So just in case.
Yes, yes. In fact, we'll do more in detail about that probably next week.
Yeah. Just in case the internet itself goes belly up, these people have these things basically recorded on offline media, like the Library of Congress, like underground storage. It's cool. So no matter.
A cassette tape.
No. Like a lot more hardcore than that.
All right.
And it was just a strange conversation I ended up having with somebody over a beer in the city about a month and a half ago. And he's like, well, send me this information. And I sent it to him and they sucked the entire thing down and put it away into a vault somewhere.
That's really good.
It is kind of cool. All right, Martin, thank you so much for taking your time. Folks out there, thanking you as well for taking the time to download the show and listen to it. And it's nice to be back for a change. It's been, I don't know, like 3 or 4 months. And I hope to be back on again soon.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know. Those long gaps, they hurt.
They do get a little painful, especially when you have to listen to you guys over and over again.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Cheers, guys.
All right, mate.
God bless and good night.